This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Dust World, Undying Mercenaries, Book 2. Written by B.V. Larson, narrated by Mark Boyette. Earth meets Galactic Empire, a timeline of events. 1922, radio broadcasting sweeps Earth, becoming the first of many forms of streaming transmissions that reach out into space at the speed of light. 1943, Imperial Galactic outposts pick up a growing tide of transmissions from Earth. They open a case file and launch a study. 1947, a rash of UFO sightings is recorded on Earth as the investigation by the Galactics begins. 1969, NASA lands two men on the moon, taking humanity's first step into the cosmos. The alarming advance is reported to Galactic Central. 1977, Voyager 1 is launched on a mission to explore beyond the limits of the solar system. 1993, the European Union is formed, becoming the first of many multinational conglomerations to follow. 1995, the first exoplanet is discovered circling 51 Pegasi, a main sequence star. Thousands more discoveries soon follow. 2012, Voyager 1 becomes the first man-made object to travel outside the solar system. The violation is carefully noted by galactic observers. 2025, worldwide economic collapse hastens the formation of multiple political blocs and increased nationalism. China, the EU, and the North American Collective, NAC, enter a new Cold War era. 2041, Earth's first and only colony ship, Hydra, is launched toward Zeta Herculis. The colonists are primarily political exiles from the NAC. 2052, having detected humanity's rise in technological prowess and various violations in conduct, the Galactic Empire is compelled to act. Local Battle Fleet 921 is dispatched to the solar system and galactic rule is established. 2054, on Earth, cultural shock gives way to acceptance. The former rival political blocs form sector governments underneath a central hegemony government, which in turn is ruled by the distant galactics. 2058, Earth's first mercenary legion, Victrix, executes two successful missions during their initial year of operation, bringing home much-needed galactic credits and proving Earth is a viable new member of the Empire. 2076, Legion Varus is formed to handle clandestine off-world missions. 2081, an outbreak of rebellious factions in Brasilia sector is put down. 7 million are killed in the subsequent purge. 2099, James McGill is born. 2121, McGill joins Legion Varus. During his first tour, he's instrumental in ending all mercenary contracts with Cancri 9, a disaster that is later ruled to be unavoidable. Earth, subsequently, enters an economic downward spiral. 2122, Hydra, Earth's one and only colony mission, finally reports to the homeworld. The colonization of another star system has been achieved, but it is a violation of galactic law. Legion Varus is dispatched to handle the situation. The slain care little if they sleep or rise again. Aeschylus, 479 B.C. Chapter 1. Right from the start, I didn't enjoy my 4 months of shore leave. The veterans and adjuncts told us that after a year of blood and hard living, we were bound to have trouble settling back into our old lives. The Legion Sykes gave us a short speech about disconnection problems before we were released and sent marching down the gangplanks into Newark Spaceport, and they suggested we should contact the Legion if we felt we needed help. I laughed that off, went home to Georgia on the Sky train, and then endured the cubicle party my parents threw for me in our Habs rec room. A dozen neighbors and friends had gathered, so I glued a smile on my face. All the while, I wanted nothing more than to get away from everybody. For the next few weeks, I think I was in shock. Civilian life didn't seem fun to me anymore. The first chance I got, I hunted down Carlos and some of the others from my unit. We got seriously drunk. That felt good, but it only lasted for a few hours. Staggering home again, I awakened to find my mom making me breakfast. I ate it, threw it up in the bathroom, then ate some more.
"You want to talk about it, James?"
she asked. "No," I said. "I'm fine."
"Getting things off your chest can really help."
I looked at her, and she forced a smile. I could see the worry in her face, and it bugged me. "Telling war stories won't help anything," I said. She dropped her eyes to stare at the floor, and she hugged me briefly.
"You should try to get back into your old routines," she said.
I did as she suggested for the next month or so. I tried to fall back into my old habits, but I felt disconnected from gaming buddies, old girlfriends from school, and even my own parents. It wasn't all me, I could tell that. Oh, sure, people I knew smiled at me whenever I came around. They patted my back and fed me sandwiches, a few even bought me drinks. But when they looked at me, they stared a little too long. There was darkness in their eyes while they did it, too. They could see something in me, something different. There was a distance between me and everyone else, a separation. It took me a while to figure out what it was. "You aren't sure that I really am James McGill," I said to my dad suddenly one Thursday night in June. "What?" he asked, startled. He'd been lying on his back watching a streaming ball game on the ceiling. It was the only flat surface large enough in our tiny apartment for a big screen. He adjusted his recliner, and it pushed him up into a vertical position. He paused the game. "What did you say, son?"
"I can't blame you for not knowing who I am," I said. "Sometimes I'm not entirely sure myself."
My dad gave me a small, nervous chuckle.
"I don't know what you're talking about, James."
"Let me spell it out for you. By my count, I'm on my fourth body. I'm not in the skin I was born with, Dad. Do you get that? I died out there in space. I died and was reborn with a fresh body built from alien slime."
Another nervous chuckle from him, and his eye twitched a little. It hadn't been a wink, I was certain of that.
"Sure," I continued. "I look like the old James. I have his familiar laugh. I have the same hair. I like the same brand of beer. And I can still kick most people's ass in an online shooter whenever I bother to log in."
My dad stared at me for another long second. Then he straightened up.
"You're my kid," he said firmly. "You're still my kid, I'm certain about that."
I smiled.
"Thanks, Dad. But I'm undeniably different. You have to admit that."
"You've grown up, that's all. You've been out to the stars. People always have trouble coming home after being in a war. That's been true throughout history. Maybe you should contact the Legion. Maybe the bio people can help."
I snorted.
"Yeah," I said. "They'll give me a shot of something. They'll bleed me and order me to piss in cups until I run dry. And if I don't like what they find, you know what they'll do?"
My dad shook his head slowly.
"They'll kill me again, that's what. I'll be recycled, hoping for a better grow."
Dad looked horrified.
"I don't understand."
I stopped him with a raised hand. I had never told my family about what really happened when you died and came back. I'd skipped all that. It wasn't clean, and I suddenly felt bad for burdening my father with all this crap.
"I'm sorry, Dad. I'm going for a walk."
"Wait,"
he said, jumping up out of his chair and grabbing my arm. I looked at him.
"There's something else. You've got the wrong idea. You haven't been watching the news, have you?"
I frowned, shaking my head. My dad sucked in his breath.
People aren't thinking about how you died. They don't think of you as some kind of zombie. You can forget all about that. We don't think like that because we haven't experienced it. What we're wondering is just what your legion did out there, son.
It was my turn to look confused. My dad pointed to the ceiling.
Notice how we stream games and junk all the time. We don't want to watch the news. No one does. People are scared, James. That's what's wrong with them.
Scared? Why?
Because Cankri 9 has dropped our contracts. They canceled them all. Germanica, Solstice, Victrix. No one is flying out there to work anymore. The news agencies aren't saying why, but they do often mention that Legion Varus was the last to serve on Steel World.
I felt a sudden squeeze in my guts. This was much worse than being feared as a member of the Walking Dead. I thought things were bad before, but now I was beginning to get the real picture. This wasn't about me. Not exactly.
You're telling me that everyone thinks Legion Varus screwed up? That we somehow pissed off the princes and lost our best interstellar trading client?
He nodded slowly. I let out a sigh that left me empty.
They're right, in a way, I said. But they're also wrong. There was nothing we could have done to keep those contracts from getting canceled, Dad.
What happened out there?
He asked me, his voice barely above a whisper. I almost told him the truth then, but I stopped myself. We weren't supposed to talk about it. Legion Varus didn't have as many rules on conduct as most legions did, but secrecy in the area of mercenary contracts was definitely one of them.
I can't talk about that.
But believe me, the dinos on Cankri 9 were going to screw us one way or another. They were never Earth's friends.
Dad nodded slowly. Okay. I hope knowing the truth makes you feel better.
Yeah, sure,
I said, trying to laugh it off.
People think my legion ruined the planet's economy single-handedly? That's a lot better than thinking I'm a freak.
No, he said. It's not ruined. Sure, we're in for some hard times. Some belt tightening is overdue, that's all.
I reached for the vid controller, which rested on the table next to Dad's recliner. I flipped it to the news, to the financial browsing section. I climbed into a chair beside my father's and stretched out on it. My dad quietly reclined his chair again, and we stared at the ceiling together. I watched vid after vid. They were all the same. Planet-wide, we were going into a recession. At least that's what the suits called it, but the more excitable people called it a crash. The more they talked, the more I became concerned. Companies and governments were announcing shortages, rationings, and layoffs everywhere. District governments, sector governments, and even hegemony had declared budget shortfalls and were listing their proposed cutbacks. All alien tech commodities were off limits for civilian purchase. Every galactic credit on Earth had to be wrapped up into something they called a relief fund. I had to wonder who was going to feel relieved. My mom showed up then, returning from the store in the middle of a streaming netcast that showed idle legionaries sitting on park benches in Asia. They looked bored and pissed off.
"Damn it, Pete," she said accusingly. "I thought we weren't going to tell him."
"He figured it out," Dad said. "He was bound to catch on eventually. The whole world is talking about it."
She huffed and carried her purchases into another room and began putting stuff away. I turned my attention back to the screen. An article scrolling at the bottom of the display caught my eye. Had they just mentioned Legion Varus by name? I clicked on the link, and after a few bonus commercials you couldn't skip, we were treated to a raving politician who blamed my legion by name for destroying interplanetary relations without authorization.
"But we didn't screw up," I shouted at the screen. "The lizards planned it all out before we even got there. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about."
My mom came back into the room after hearing me shout. She looked worried.
What happened up there, James?
She asked me. I almost told her the whole story. We'd been briefed not to, but I almost did it anyway. Legion Varus was special in ways no one else understood outside the hegemony government. We fought for new contracts in space. We fought for new territories and protected our old ones. The Saurian people on Steel World had decided to challenge our rights under galactic law to monopolize mercenary contracts in the region. We'd stopped them, but in doing so, we'd lost Steel World as a client planet. We would have lost much more if they'd beaten us and become a new trading rival on our doorstep. Disaster had been averted. But we were still in for hard times. I looked from one of my parents to the other. I knew they wanted me to explain it. I knew they wanted to be able to tell their neighbors, friends, and even my own relatives that their son wasn't part of some renegade legion of losers. But I couldn't. The stakes were too high. I'd already made enough mistakes on my first campaign. I wasn't interested in making any new ones at home. I shook my head and sighed. I can't. The whole story is hegemony level, top secret, classified, whatever you want to call it. They looked disappointed. We fell into a brooding silence. I couldn't stand it. And about 5 minutes later, I went to our tiny storage chamber. I managed to get the organizer robot to spit out my stored bag, then I headed for the door. My dad intercepted me.
Give us some hugs, at least, he said.
Huh?
You're leaving, aren't you? You got the call.
I stared at him for a brief second. He thought I'd been called up by Varus, but really I'd been planning on finding another couch to crash on.
I've got to go, I said. There were hugs, and my mom cried. This scene was familiar to me. We'd already done this once more than a year ago. Back then I'd been starry-eyed and nervous. Now I felt emotional, but resigned.
Here, my dad said, pressing a box into my hand. A replacement. You said you lost your old one.
I looked at the box.
What's this?
Open it. We were saving it for your birthday.
I mustered a smile and opened it. I found a knife inside, a mean-looking thing. It was no pocket knife, it was a combat model. A real one, not a cheap knockoff from another sector. I tested the edge and smiled.
Thanks, Dad.
You never told us how you lost the first one,
my mom said, wiping away a tear. I shook my head, marveling at the blade. The metal was dark, except for the edge, which was so fine it shone white.
No, I didn't, I said. And you don't want to hear that story.
I lost my pocket knife the third time I died on Steel World. The first time I'd been torn apart by lizards, but I'd found it again in the piles of recovered equipment. When I'd been executed later on, my belongings had been returned to me when I was revived. But that third time, well, that had been the charm. I'd been blown to bits, and my knife had been blown up with me.
Thanks, guys,
I said, and gave them an honest smile. I hugged them both again and left. I walked out of my parents' building, and I didn't go back. I didn't bother to take the sky train this time. That was too expensive, and I wasn't in any kind of hurry. I spent a week heading north on bumping public trams. As long as I was careful, I knew I had enough money to last for months. I decided to have myself a little vacation. I checked out a few towns, walked on a lot of beaches, and watched a lot of vids on my tapper. Something went wrong with my tapper unit on the sixth day, however, and I couldn't get it to access the net anymore. I wasn't sure if it was related to billing or if it was just a technical issue. Tappers were organic screens embedded in the flesh of your forearm. The beauty of the system was that you couldn't lose it, and it was supposed to keep you connected to the world at all times. There weren't any batteries to be recharged either, as it fed off the electrical impulses naturally generated by the human body. Even when the soldier died, his tapper was faithfully reconstructed by the Legion Revival units because it was organic, just like any other part of the body. After my tapper died, I spent most of my time dozing on beaches with my head on my ruck. This wasn't as peaceful as it sounded, as I often dreamed about lizards tearing off human limbs and making excited gurgling noises as they fed. The summer days were fairly enjoyable for me, despite my dreams. I felt like I was experiencing Earth. There weren't any officers yelling at me or worried parents eyeing me oddly. I felt like a ghost gliding through the world, and I kind of liked it that way. I usually wore my fatigues, but as a precaution, I covered my Legionnaire's patch. The Wolf's Head of Varus was on far too many net broadcasts lately, and never with a happy story attached. My wanderings drew me farther north every day. I knew where I was going, back to the mustering hall where this had all started. The Legion people would be there. They'd know what the score was. They'd know when we were going to ship out again. It was all supposed to be a secret, but someone always knew what was really going on. Chapter 2. It was a Monday night when I arrived in Newark. The tram dumped me on a street I didn't know. I'd never liked this city. The best I could say was it wasn't the worst place on the planet. These days, most of Newark looked more like a war zone than some of the war zones I'd walked through. People said there were nice areas, but I'd never seen one. I guess if you're rich enough, every town has a nice section. But I didn't know any rich people. I headed through darkening streets, looking for the mustering hall. The hall's doors were automatic, and I knew that the building would be closed to the public after 8, but I thought maybe the doors would let me in because I was a Legionnaire. The only other option would be to find a room to rent, which was going to be hard. Without my tapper, I couldn't access my account. I didn't have much cash left on me, and I decided it would be best if I let my folks have the rest of the credits left in my account anyway. They were going to need all of it if the news reports were right. The crash was looming closer every day, and people were already hardening their hearts and scrambling to move their money someplace safe. My own account had once contained genuine galactic credits. They were hard currency, good anywhere in the Empire on any planet. But by decree, the real money had been swept from my account and exchanged for hegemony credits. Hegemony cash was better than district money, but it was only good on Earth. As my parents might be in trouble, I'd let them keep most of it. All their accounts were in district money, which was spiraling lower in value every day. With hegemony cash to draw on, I was at least fairly sure they wouldn't starve. I found the big building at around 9 p.m. and tried the doors. They flashed up my info, but they didn't open. Instead, the door buzzed and flashed a red hand at me, the universal stop symbol. I wasn't getting in tonight. The door didn't even talk to me or give me a reason. It was one of those older, dumber, not-so-smart doors. Turning around and muttering curses, I froze. I wasn't alone. Three figures stood near. They weren't in my face. They were standing back a ways, keeping out of the circle of concrete covered by the security camera over the door. I could tell by their easy stances they had this down to a routine. They knew where they could be seen and recorded. They'd probably followed me from the drop-off point and knew that the door wouldn't let me in. I had a few choices now, I realized. I could try to bluff my way through them, or I could call the police on my tapper, but that wasn't working. Besides, the police might not be getting paid anymore. Maybe they wouldn't have come down here, and these thugs knew it. Maybe the muggers paid the police more than the local gov did, and the cops were never going to come, even if they did get my distress call. My third option was the least appetizing. I could stand close to the door and the camera, shivering here all night, hoping they'd keep away until morning came. I already knew I wasn't taking that option. I wasn't going to huddle here and have them laugh watching me take a leak against the building when the urge came. My eyes narrowed and I felt myself getting pissed off. This is something that happens to me now and again, often at the least opportune moments. Call it a character flaw if you like. It was what it was. Normally, I'm an easygoing guy. Ask any of my friends. I can put up with a lot of shit day to day. But tonight, I was done taking any more of it, especially from these three losers with their little trap. What had me pissed off the most was wondering how many Legionnaires they'd shaken down, robbing them when they came too late to get in the door. Probably they'd usually gone for the hopefuls, the not full-fledged Legionnaires. Poor kids who'd come down here hoping to join up. Maybe they'd mistaken me for one of them as I'd covered my insignia. Instead of trying to slip past them or bluff them or hugging the dumbass smart door like it was my mama, I walked directly toward the nearest of them. He was also the largest, although not as tall as I was. Their easy stances changed as I approached confidently. The leader stood his ground while the other two walked slowly toward me from the sides. I ignored the sidekicks. I went straight for the leader. "You lost, boy?" I asked loudly. He frowned at me. I could see his lower jaw, though the rest of his face was shrouded in a dark hood. Criminals wore hoodies all the time when they were on the street. It was illegal to cover your face to avoid facial recognition cameras in most cities, but people still did it all the time. "I think you're the one who's lost," he answered with a snort of amusement.
"What's your name, kid?"
"Friggin' yokel," he laughed. "I'm the tax man, and it's time to pay your taxes." The self-proclaimed tax man put out his hand with his palm up and made a grabbing gesture. "You'd best put that begging hand away," I told him, "before you lose it." His amusement vanished.
"What? You crazy? Give me your cash, all of it. Can't you count? We got three men against one, fool."
"No," I said, shedding my outer jacket and leaving it draped over my right hand. "There's only one man here. Only one Legionnaire talking to three pieces of trash." My patch stood out. It showed the full stripes of a specialist. Above that was the wolf's head of Varys. I hadn't yet qualified for a particular specialty, which would add symbols to my sleeve, but Centurion Graves had given me the promotion before I left the ship. On our next mission, I was to train en route. I was best qualified as a tech or a weaponeer. I wasn't sure yet which path I would be placed upon, but I was kind of hoping for weaponeer.
"You haven't got no ray gun," the leader said.
The other two had stopped on either side of me, standing just out of reach with their hands in their pockets. They might have weapons in there, or they might not. Like I said, I was pissed off, so I hardly cared one way or the other.
"You know what happens if this goes the wrong way?"
I asked.
"Yeah, you die."
"No," I said. "I can't die. Not like you can. I'm right here next to the hall. My mental engrams are being recorded at a constant rate, and my body scans were stored over a year ago. If I die, I'll pop right back out in the morning. If you losers die, you'll stay dead. Forever."
"Crazy mother," the leader said. "All right, you can walk, but keep your shit to yourself if we ever meet again."
I chuckled and shook my head.
"You ladies don't get it yet. You're the ones that are in trouble, and you're not going to walk, not today. I can't have you jokers shaking down recruits tomorrow night. This ends now."
"What?" demanded the thug on the left. "Why are we even listening to this fool?" "Shut up, Avi," the tax man hissed.
"So it's the tax man and Avi, did I get that right?" I asked. "Anyone else want to give me a name or a tapper ID?"
At that point, I thought I had the situation in the bag. They were crumbling. I had the leader cowed, and one of his sidekicks was in rebellion. I figured I'd frog march them all to the nearest cop station before this was over. But I was wrong. I'd yet to hear a word out of the third guy who silently stood to my right side. The quiet man pulled out a weapon at this point in the conversation. It wasn't a gun, not exactly. Gunpowder weapons are strictly controlled and rare in cities these days, but what he pulled out of his coat was a weapon nonetheless. A riveter, to be exact. A construction man's tool. In my time, most buildings were formed using puffcrete as the primary building material. An alien commodity, it could be shaped into any form, and when it set, it was harder and lighter than carbonized steel. But its very strength was a problem because often construction crews needed to connect slabs of puffcrete together. How did one do that with a nearly indestructible material? The answer was a modern-day riveter. The weapon was small, not much bigger than a power drill, but it operated more like a snap rifle, accelerating rivets to fantastic velocities and hammering them home at close range. Those rivets could kill just as easily as bullets could. They were possibly even more deadly because they hit with fantastic speed and force. The third man's move left me no choice but to act. Sure, I'd play the part of a tough guy who didn't fear death, but I was a liar. I feared death quite a bit, possibly more than these three clowns combined. I'd experienced death, and I didn't want to go through it again. Dying is kind of like getting vaccinations. Every kid starts off curious and clueless when the needles come, but they learn very quickly to fear them. I had experienced the needle one too many times, and I wasn't interested in a repeat performance. I had my new knife concealed under the jacket I'd shed earlier. Taking it off had served two purposes. It had revealed my rank, but it had also hidden my only weapon. I hadn't planned on putting the new weapon to use so soon. I hadn't figured it would come out of its sheath until I left Earth. But I'd been wrong. I took one quick step toward the guy lifting the riveter and reached out with my knife. He got a shot off, unfortunately. I was clipped in the left hip. A burning line that felt like a dog bite sizzled there. I hoped he'd missed the bone, but I didn't have time to worry about that now. My left leg was still holding me up, but I didn't know if I was on borrowed time or not. The quiet guy didn't have time for a second shot, as the riveter kicked up and almost flew into his face. The tool had released so much energy it had recoiled and caught him by surprise. He was clearly an amateur with a makeshift weapon rather than an expert who used it in his daily routine. One lunge, one slash. That was all I had time for. My knife flickered and took his hand off at the wrist. The other two were reaching for us. They were yelling something, but I no longer cared what they were saying. This was on. The tax man had the presence of mind to grab onto my knife with both of his. It didn't save him. I dropped my knife and jerked him forward, using the momentum of his motion against him. He stumbled over his buddy, who was no longer the silent type. He was on his knees and howling by now, the fingers of his remaining hand clamped over his stump, trying to stop the torrent of blood that was splattering everyone's shoes. The tax man went into a belly flop when I let him go, and I kneed him on his way down. He grunted in pain. Avi was behind me then, and I took a fist in the kidney. Three or four more blows landed on my head and shoulders. They hurt, but they didn't put me out. He threw his arms wide and looped them around mine, trying to bear hug me. The tax man scrambled for the riveter, and I knew I couldn't let him have it. I couldn't just pick it up because this Avi guy was on my back, so I kicked it away toward the smart door. I broke Avi's hold, and then I broke his jaw. None of them seemed to be trained in hand-to-hand. Legionnaires usually died a time or two in boot camp. We took our training very seriously. Abby ran off into the night holding his face together and sobbing. I looked around and noticed that the one-handed guy had disappeared, too. I couldn't blame either of them. But the tax man wasn't through yet. He ran toward the smart door. He was going for the riveter. "Give it up, man!" I shouted, snatching up my knife. I rushed after him, painfully. My hip slowed me down. He made it to the riveter first, and he lifted it up, grinning. His face was fully exposed, his hood having fallen to his shoulders in the struggle. "You're dead," he told me. "You're on camera," I told him. His face faltered. He knew it was true. His hands tightened on the riveter. I knew he could hammer a chunk of metal into my breastbone in an instant. I couldn't even dodge effectively, and there was nowhere to hide. I watched his face, twisting and deciding, kill me and go to prison, or run and go to prison anyway for the list of other crimes his face was now attached to. As I wondered which way his mind would twist, the door behind him buzzed and opened. Chapter 3. The taxman glanced over his shoulder. I couldn't blame him for that. He was caught between me and whoever was stepping into the situation behind him. I didn't wait around for his surprise to subside. I didn't have time to reach him with a kick or a punch, so I threw my knife at him. Throwing a knife accurately isn't easy, even if the weapon used is balanced and built for the purpose. I'd been combat trained aboard my Legion's ship for months, but we hadn't done much in the way of knife throwing. My whirling blade sailed past the taxman, missing him by a hair. Instead of its intended target, it thunked into the smart door behind him.
McGill, you asshole!
Carlos? I couldn't believe it. He was standing there, his stocky form silhouetted in the doorway. I winced when I saw the knife had nearly hit him, but I didn't have time for apologies. I came forward, closing with the taxman. He turned back to me, lifting his riveter, and I knew I was screwed. I couldn't reach him before he could pull the trigger. Thick arms came out and latched onto the thug's wrist. Carlos had finally made his move. The riveter fired over and over. The concrete at my feet sparked with tiny yellow explosions. Carlos and I tackled him a second later and he went down, but he still had both hands clamped onto that damned riveter. Not wanting either of us to be shot in the foot in the struggle, I ended the fight by slamming the smart door into the taxman's head repeatedly. Finally, he stopped moving. We stood over the unconscious thug, breathing hard.
Making friends again, huh, McGill?
Carlos grunted out.
As always.
By this time, hegemony MPs had reached the scene. The smart door must have alerted them. We explained the situation, and they arrested the thug at our feet.
What's his name? One of them asked me.
He said he was the tax man,
I explained. The MP twisted his lips.
Very funny guy. He can tell his next joke in the district auto courts.
The MPs hauled him up, carrying him between the two of them like a sack of potatoes.
He's not dead, I said.
I figured.
Shouldn't you call an ambulance or something?
The MP snorted.
They won't come out here. We're going to have to drive him to the district hospital ourselves. It's a jurisdiction thing.
I frowned and shrugged as they hauled him off.
I don't get you, McGill, Carlos said. One second you're in a death fight with that loser, the next you're worried they'll stub his toes.
He might have a broken neck. They should put him on a stretcher or something. He's not like us, he's a civvy. He won't get a new grow if they screw up his body.
Carlos laughed and shook his head.
He would have killed you if he could have. Get over it.
People are desperate, Carlos, I said.
I don't know what his story is, but I'm sure it's not a happy one.
What can we do about it?
We can bring home the bacon, I said. We can go out there and win new accounts, new planets for our legions to serve.
Carlos snorted at me.
Yeah, sure. We're going to save Earth. You always have big, dumb ideas. I think it's because you're so tall. The air is too thin up there for your brain to work properly.
Lines like that had often brought Carlos and me to physical blows, but I restrained my irritation. It was just his way of talking, and I'd gotten used to it for the most part.
What are you doing here at the hall anyway? I asked him.
Mustering back in, same as you.
We'd been told we'd be contacted and brought back to the same mustering hall where we'd been recruited after shore leave was over, but it hadn't been long enough at that yet.
By my accounting, we've got nearly 3 more weeks of leave, I said.
What? Didn't you get the call? We're supposed to be here now. That's why the adjunct sent me up here when you buzzed the door. The computers alerted him. Why didn't you check in with your tapper?
It's not working. And no, I didn't get that call. I came back to see if there was any news about our next contract.
We were walking through the hall by this time. I was still limping, but it wasn't that bad. I figured if I got the wound sprayed over by a flesh painter, I'd be right as rain in a day or two. The mustering hall was a loud, echo-filled chamber, nearly as big as a football stadium. As the neon legionnaires had been kicked out, only official people were left still milling around.
Lucky you, Carlos said.
You would have been reported AWOL if you hadn't shown up by tomorrow night.
Anyway, here's the update. Our contract was canceled. We've got a new one, though. We ship out in less than a week. No one seems to know where we're going or what the mission is.
I nodded. I hear there are a lot of Legion contract cancellations happening.
Figures, Carlos said. Everyone's getting a vacation except for us. Same old Varys bullshit. Whatever the new job is, I bet it's going to suck.
I couldn't argue with him on that point. On the way down to Legion Varys' offices, which were located on the lower floor, we ran into two Legionnaires. They were standing on either side of the escalators, loitering. I could tell right off they were from a different Legion than we were. They had shiny black boots, and their Legion patch depicted Taurus, the Raging Bull. The emblem indicated that they were both from Germanica, a respectable outfit. I noticed that the symbol was bigger than our wolf's head symbol. In fact, their patches were so wide they were hard to ignore. Germanica was one of the famous legions. I'd tried to join them when I'd first come to the mustering hall last year. They hadn't wanted me, and I'd joined Varys instead. Carlos and I glanced at these two, then moved to walk between them to the escalators, but they moved to bar our way.
"What do you losers want?"
asked the legionnaire on the right. She was a black woman with a pair of the thickest thighs I'd ever seen on a fit person. The legionnaire on the left gave a bark of laughter at her comment. He had his arms crossed, and they were big arms, I had to give him that. He had reddish, curly hair that was cut so tightly it looked like he had a cap on his head. He was a specialist, too, same rank as me, but his second patch indicated he was a weaponeer.
"You want to go downstairs where the rats live?"
the woman asked.
"That's it, isn't it, rat?"
"Yeah," Carlos said, puffing up his chest a bit. "You clowns from Germanica shouldn't talk so big. I hear your last contract was canceled, and I do mean your last."
Their faces, which had been bullying and amused, suddenly displayed rage. Carlos had a special gift when it came to making people want to hit him. I knew Germanica had lost their contracts. Everyone had. Their contracts had mostly come from Steel World, but that was all over with now.
"You little shit," the redhead weaponeer said, stepping forward and poking Carlos with a thick finger. "That's why we're here. We want to talk to you Varys bastards. You're the reason we lost our contracts in the first place."
As legionnaires from different legions, we were technically in the same overall force, but there was a strong sense of rivalry between the different outfits. In the past, troops from various military services hadn't always gotten along. There had always been Army-Navy rivalry, for example. But with Legionnaires, it was even stronger than that. We were more like armies from different allied countries. We operated independently, and we had complex relationships. In the case of Legion Varys, however, the relationships weren't complex. Pretty much everyone else despised us. I put my hands up in a cautioning gesture. I figured we could settle this calmly. After all, I'd just been in one fight, and that was usually my limit on any given evening. But before I could speak words of peace and wisdom, Carlos had his mouth open again.
"Unemployed," he said, then laughed. "We've got a contract, and you're standing in the way of one of Earth's few sources of hard currency. I wonder why the aliens picked us over you guys. Maybe because we get the job done, instead of whining about how our cush deals went sour. I'm glad you pukes got canceled. Maybe you'll have to do some real fighting next time out."
The redhead's fist was pulling back before Carlos even finished his little speech. I couldn't recall seeing a guy's face go from white to red quite that quickly before. The situation might have been a record for Carlos, who often generated this sort of response from people.
"Stand down, specialist," called a voice.
We looked and saw an officer striding in our direction. She looked small but mean. She had a hegemony patch on her shoulder, a globe, and under that there were two bars which served as the universal emblem of rank for adjuncts. I could tell the redhead was uncertain. His arms stayed up and cocked. I could almost see in his mind that he was weighing a night in the brig against the joy of punching Carlos.
It was a tough call, and I couldn't blame him for hesitating. Not helping matters, Carlos was smiling at him and tapping at his chin with his middle finger, begging for the punch. The female legionnaire from Germanica diffused things. She put her hand on the redhead's fist and gently pushed it down.
"These rejects aren't worth it," she said, giving each of us a sneer. "You know, you're right. We did lose our contracts. But we got new ones. Bullshit missions because of Varys."
The two stepped aside and left. The adjunct glared at us, watching as we separated. When we'd safely passed down the escalator, she disappeared.
"I was totally going to take down that ginger-headed moron," Carlos said. "He's lucky a couple of girls were there to save his sorry ass."
"Uh-huh," I said. Carlos looked at me, and his expression turned thoughtful.
"What do you think she meant about getting new bullshit contracts?"
"I don't know. Maybe they have to take on crappy jobs like we do. Maybe that's why they're hating us right now."
"They always hate us. But yeah, that makes sense. I bet they're trying to carve out new territory." "Ha, that serves them right. Let them do some hard fighting and dying for a change."
"You're a bitter little man, Carlos," I told him. He glared at me, but then he looked thoughtful again.
"Do you think everyone on Earth blames us for what happened? For the lizards dropping contracts with all the legions?"
"Probably. The news nets are pushing that idea. They never accuse us directly, but they hint around it all the time. They talk about how the very last legion to set foot on Cancri IX was the notorious Legion Varys. Then they go into a brief discussion about what a bunch of losers and misfits we all are."
"But that's just a cover story, right? I mean, Hegemony Gov knows we're the best, right? That's what you said the Tribune told you."
I glanced at him and felt a guilty pang. The truth was, the Tribune hadn't told me any such thing. He'd said we took on the jobs that no one else wanted, and that we did essential work. But that pretty much describes morticians and school janitors who sprinkle smart dust on barf stains, too. Just because you had a hard, necessary job didn't guarantee anyone would respect you for it. I decided to maintain the fiction, however. Now wasn't the time to bring Carlos down any further.
"Yeah," I said. "That's right. We're the best in the system. They're just jealous."
"Damn straight."
We reached the Varys offices and walked into the wardroom. It wasn't big enough to hold all the soldiers present, so we had to stand in the back shoulder to shoulder. There must have been 100 people in the room, which was built to hold half that number.
"Glad you could make it, McGill,"
Veteran Harris rumbled at me. I touched my fingers to my cap and flashed him a smile he didn't return.
"Eyes front," he said.
I looked forward and saw another familiar face. It was Primus Turov. She was the leader of my cohort, which was mostly made up of people from North America sector. She didn't like me, but fortunately she wasn't looking in my direction right now. The only thing I liked about the woman was her posterior, which I found myself staring at right off. With an effort, I tuned into the briefing. I had the feeling she'd been talking for quite a while.
"Our destination world is still a secret, but our mission is not. We're to grow Earth's territory. We've lost certain critical accounts, and they aren't coming back. Because of that, our entire world is feeling an economic bite."
"More like an economic swallow," whispered Carlos.
Veteran Harris must have been waiting for this moment as he'd positioned himself nearby. It was like he'd known that one of us would eventually make a comment. His boot slid sideways, crashing into Carlos's shins. It was a move I'd seen him use before, usually on recruits who weren't showing the appropriate level of respect. Carlos made an odd sound that made me wonder if he'd consumed a small animal in a single gulp. The troops around us grinned faintly, without ever taking their eyes off the Primus. I had to admit, I was grinning too. The Primus's head turned, and she stared at us coldly for a second or two, before continuing with her speech and her walk. That woman really knew how to walk.
It had to have something to do with her hips and the heels of her officer's boots. Hell, I don't know. I felt like I was being hypnotized by some kind of exotic snake as I listened and stared.
"This campaign will be different," she said. "As you muster back in, you'll all be required to pass a specialized battery of tests."
There were groans. I glanced at Carlos, but he was keeping his lips compressed together tightly, resisting his natural urges. Veteran Harris's arm lashed out twice, slapping recruits who dared to voice their dismay. Discipline in a modern legion was very physical. I'd read about the old Roman legions during my shore leave. The historical records had stipulated a long list of harsh punishments for soldiers in ancient times. One or two had stuck out in my mind. When a Roman citizen signed on for military service and took the oath known as the sacramentum, he knew what he was in for. The sacramentum stated that he would serve Rome on pain of punishment up to and inclusive of his death. The discipline was much more rigorous in those days, and Earth had revived the old model in response to the Galactic Empire's requirements. In ancient Rome, an officer had the power to summarily execute anyone under his command. Depending on the nature of the crime and the disposition of the commander, punishments varied. A man might be fined a few silver coins for minor infractions, or he might be publicly flogged until his skin hung from his back in bloody strips. For serious crimes like treasonous behavior, the standard penalty was to be sewn into a leather sack full of snakes and tossed into a nearby lake or river to drown while the serpents presumably went mad and chewed on the disgraced soldier. Although I'd never heard of anyone being drowned with reptiles, I was pretty sure some commanders had thought it over, especially if they were dealing with a guy like Carlos.
"Yes," said the Primus loudly with her hands on her hips. She'd stopped strutting around and now looked deadly serious. "I'm talking about a few tests. Blood, core samples, the works. You'll have to pass physical stress tests, too. I don't want any weaklings on this campaign. The stakes are too high."
Core samples? I didn't even know what the hell that was, and I exchanged worried glances with a few others nearby.
"We are heading to a harsh environment,"
Turov continued, as if that explained everything.
"I'm only making sure we're all fit to do our duty. Accordingly, I want everyone to spend a night in the hall instead of heading out to the spaceport. We don't have the facilities to do the testing on the transports, and Corvus won't be in orbit until the very hour we launch. We'll do the tests here, and they will be administered by hegemony personnel."
Another round of groans and cuffing sounds swept the chamber. This wasn't good news. As harshly as my legion's personnel treated us, they were at least on our side. They'd been in battle with most of us, and some of us had even developed personal relationships with the biospecialists. That wouldn't be the case with the hegemony people. They weren't our friends. If the reaction of the two Germanica legionnaires was any indicator, this was going to go badly. Most members of other legions had spit on us before, but now they thought they had real reason to hate us.
"Any questions?"
I knew I shouldn't, but I did. I raised my hand.
"For God's sake, McGill,"
Harris muttered. I knew why he wanted me to stay quiet. Primus Turov and I went way back, in a bad way. She tried to have me executed. In fact, Harris himself had done the job, killing me with a grin on his face. But I'd managed to weasel out of that with an unauthorized revival. That had never sat well with Turov. The very fact I was still breathing annoyed my superior officer. It hadn't been a good place to start off a relationship, but I hoped she might forget about it eventually. "Sir?" I asked when she called on me. "Has the Legion considered trying to counter all the bad press we're getting? I mean, everyone on the planet hates us now. They think we single-handedly brought financial ruin to Earth." I don't know what Primus Turov had expected me to ask. Maybe something like, "Where's the bathroom?" but I was pretty sure from her shocked expression that my question had taken her by surprise. She paused for a moment before answering.
Legion Varys's reputation isn't an issue, she said. Remember, all of you, we aren't in this for the glory. Fame would only make our job harder. We'll fix public opinion by fixing the problem, not by going on a PR campaign. What we want is to be forgotten about again. We fix things, but we don't do it with fanfare. That's our mission.
The meeting broke up after that. Carlos let out a sigh.
My life flashed before my eyes when you opened your big yap, he told me. But she took your question seriously. Must be bothering her, too.
Yeah, sure, I said. It has to be bothering all the brass. How'd you like to be in charge of a unit like this for years, only to have people talk crap about you online all day long?
That's the sad thing about it.
What do you mean?
Carlos shook his head. I mean, that even if we do fix it, we won't get the credit. People will stop being mad, sure, but they'll probably never know what we did or why.
I thought about it, and I had to admit to myself that he was probably right.
How about that Turov, huh?
Carlos asked when we'd rolled out Instamats alongside the train gliders and stretched out to sleep. I'd thrown my arm over my eyes. They never turned off the lights down here. I lifted my arm slightly and looked at him with bleary eyes.
What about her? I asked him. I'm talking about her butt, Carlos said, rubbing his face and yawning. Don't pretend you didn't notice. How can I want to screw someone and kill her at the same time?
I chuckled. My father could explain that to you. He says that's what marriage is all about.
Chapter 4 The next day was an entirely new flavor of hell. These hegemony biotypes had to be the most heartless bunch I'd ever encountered. It turned out that a core sample was just what it sounded like. They drove little round tubes of steel into your abdomens, tubes that had very sharp ends to them, and left them in your guts while we howled, squirmed, and sweated. The real trick came when they pulled these meat thermometers out of our bodies. They didn't want to give us infections or cause organ failure. That would be inconvenient and require an expensive regrow. They wanted to take their measure of our guts and heal us back up from the inside. In order to accomplish this, the tubes were equipped with flesh-spraying tips. Ever so slowly, as the tubes were withdrawn, they spit out enough fresh human cells to knit up our punctured bodies. We were left with nickel-sized scars on our bellies and tears running down our faces.
I want to congratulate you, Specialist Franklin, Carlos said, his voice coming out in hitches. You've invented the perfect torture device. Plenty of pain, but no chance of relief through death.
He got a laugh out of Franklin with that line. She laughed quite heartily. I had to wonder if she really did get a charge out of taking core samples. Afterward, the circular scars were tender, but we could function. Holding our sides, we moved slowly and painfully to the next chamber, anxious about further tests. I was surprised by what happened next. Instead of giving us a break or making us take a sit-down test at least, they put us into sparring chambers. They were sealed, bubble-like affairs. They looked like tents. Carlos and I separated with a nod.
Good luck, buddy, Carlos said. The bio told me what's coming up next, and you're going to need some.
What? I began, but he was gone, shunted off down through a line of groaning troops. Everyone had a hand on their side and a grimace on their face. As I entered my tent, a robot grabbed me. It was skinny, a pile of wires and steel tubing. It had fingers, lots of them, and the damn thing seemed to be trying to frisk me. I've gotten into trouble in the past by abusing robots. In fact, I take a certain degree of pride in my ability to mess with them.
But as the Legion people never seemed to be happy with my changes to their scripts, I thought I would give the tech who operated this thing a chance. "Can someone please explain why I should put up with this?" I asked loudly of the plastic, shivering walls. No one answered me. That was typical of Legion tests. They often wanted to see how I would handle a situation.